Hello everybody and welcome to this video, which is kindly sponsored by Squarespace. Hello everyone, and today we're going to adapt the Victualler's Yard a little bit. You can see I'm adding a new section just below some of the posters that are listed for sale at the moment. And after a little bit of consideration, I've actually decided to adapt the testimonials preset, and you'll see why in a second. I'm just going to take a fairly simple one with little text blocks and color blocks, and I'm going to change it to other recommended naval web stores. So this is where you can pick up, well, in these particular cases, naval art, mostly, from people who aren't me. So as you can see, I've made some changes here. So I've deleted one of the blocks and extended the other two. I've then gone into add block and added an image. So instead of the text, which I deleted, I've put in a screen cap from each web store. And then the sign off section, I've instead turned into a hyperlink, which you can see is set to open in a new tab. That was all done very quickly. Unfortunately, the recording somehow corrupted, so you see the after effects. But then if I save and exit, you can see if I just click on the store, well, there you go. It takes you straight to the other web store. And I can highly recommend both of these people as incredibly skilled artists, one in the digital format, one in the traditional format, easily done with Squarespace. So if after all these little mini tutorials I've been doing, you think you could build a website for maybe ideally naval history purposes, but you never know, you might want to do it for some other reason, then head over to squarespace.com/Drakenefell. You can get a free trial, and once you're ready, that little link will give you 10% off your first website or domain. So thanks once again to Squarespace for sponsoring the video, and on with the main show. Going into the 1930s, the Royal Navy faced something of a quandary. Their submarine fleet was rapidly aging out. Of the three classes built in large numbers during and just after World War I, the E-class was long gone, having been mostly scrapped at the beginning of the 1920s. Most of the H-class had followed, and only the L-class were really around in any significant numbers, and they weren't that long for this world. Most of the submarines built since that time had been larger, but also had quite small production runs, and so the submarine fleet was shrinking rather dramatically, just as ASDIC-equipped destroyers were growing in number, and with those numbers came an expanding need to train those forces, ideally with submarines. The small numbers of modern submarines couldn't really be spared from their main duties to help with this training, and the small number of surviving H-class that were being used for this purpose were both not enough to provide training to all the ASDIC-equipped ships then in service, and those projected. And while they were still decreasing in number, they were also decreasing in usefulness, as their underwater performance was, understandably, somewhat limited compared to more recent designs. And so the Rear Admiral in charge of submarines proposed building a new class of small, simple subs that would be useful for submarine crew training, destroyer ASDIC crew training, and, thanks to the relative proximity of Europe, they'd also be quite useful in holding the fort in short-range patrols if the main submarine force had to go off and fight someone like Japan. Their small size would also make them better suited to shallow waters around Europe as compared to the larger submarines that the Royal Navy had been recently building. This alone meant, of course, they would have to be armed, as initial considerations had been for an unarmed submarine. The first draft of this design was fairly elegant in its simplicity, displacing just over 400 tons, only capable of diving to about 150 feet, and armed with four forward torpedo tubes. Its peacetime armament would just be the torpedoes in those tubes, and in wartime you could carry two more in the torpedo room, but when the submarine was undertaking training missions, even just having two extra torpedoes in the torpedo room would cramp up the internal space of the sub so much that the small crew plus the trainees wouldn't be able to fit. Being such a small sub, there wouldn't be any deck guns, although some allowance was made for a couple of Lewis guns that could be brought up to be mounted on the conning tower if you really wanted to. They'd have a relatively slow surface speed of around 11 knots and a relatively standard underwater speed of 9 knots. About the only thing that was particularly advanced about the design would be that it came with ASDIC installed from the beginning, mainly to allow new submarine crews to be trained on how to use it, which skill they would then go on to use in larger subs. There was some discussion about whether the submarine should use direct drive, where the motors and the diesels could both be physically connected via clutches to the props, independent of each other, or what they termed electric drive, which would be where the diesels only ran generators, the generators then supplying power to the motors, and the motors alone therefore having a connection to the propellers. This had the advantage of being able to combine diesel generator power with battery power for greater surface speed, but it was also somewhat heavier than the clutch design. For wartime ventures, it was anticipated that the subs could have an operational radius of about 500 nautical miles, and the sub would be able to stay out at sea for about a week, maybe a few days more. This in turn would dictate the choice of communications fit, as the submarine would of course need to be able to talk to its home base out to that distance, but not really any further. Although at this stage designed to replace the H-class, and thus primarily thought of as a training vessel that had a subsidiary wartime role, in late 1934 a new proposal showed up. Instead of replacing the small but relatively conventional H-class, it was argued, why not replace them with an update of the small, but far more warlike, R-class, the world's first dedicated hunter-killer submarines, whose last member, R4, had only just left service after spending many years as a highly valuable fast underwater target for training schools. Although this new proposal would still be useful as a training vessel, it would have far more utility in wartime, since World War I had established that surface targets for Royal Navy subs would generally be few and far between, but any prospective enemy was likely to be operating many submarines of their own and targeting the vast British merchant fleet and the, reduced by treaty but still quite large, battle fleet. Thus, a dedicated submarine hunter to go after these targets could be very useful, especially since while the R-class had had to rely purely on a massive hydrophone array, the new submarine could also carry active sonar in the form of the Aztec system. This would somewhat alleviate the stress on the fleet's destroyers, and if the subs were built in large numbers, such a sub could also be usefully deployed overseas to places like Gibraltar, Malta, Singapore, or Hong Kong, where a small, short-range conventional submarine would be of pretty little use, but an underwater hunter-killer with a reasonable patrol duration would be very handy indeed for picking off the surely inevitable attempts of enemy submarines to camp outside Royal Navy bases or go after the battle fleet either as it arrived or as it left. Compared to the original design draft, this submarine variant would need a heavy torpedo armament, since guided torpedoes were still about a decade or so away as far as submarines were concerned. It was thought maybe the R-class shotgun effect with many smaller torpedoes might need to be replicated. Or, if you were going to use the larger, more conventional torpedoes, then you would at least need to carry some reloads. The sub would also need to be agile and easy to control underwater to outmaneuver enemy subs. It would need to be fast to dive or change depth once it was underwater in order to track them down, and potentially also to evade return fire. And it would need a high underwater speed. R4 could do no less than 15 knots after some hull rework had been done in the 1920s, but it was held at least 12 knots underwater would be needed so that it could chase down other submarines. Ideally, it could be a bit faster, but the 12 knot minimum was chosen as a concession to making the vessels able to be built in larger numbers for peacetime operations. It was also thought that a submarine that could run very fast underwater might have a useful tertiary role against enemy warships that strayed too close to its base, since such a sub could potentially move in far too quickly for escorts to react, or utilise their own form of Aztec, since a lot of these systems were limited when you started moving at speed. Then it could dump a big salvo of torpedoes at its target, and then make a high-speed run away. Instead of two small screws, it was thought it might be better to fit one large single screw with a bigger engine. The electric drive would have to be used, since with just one engine, a declutched diesel that was charging the batteries would of course have no propulsive effect, which wasn't brilliant. Diving depth would need to be increased by about 50 feet if it was going to be looking at real combat operations, especially underwater dogfighting. And there was some discussion over what kind of weapons loadout it should have, with the two leading options being either six full-size 21-inch torpedo tubes and no reloads, or four internal tubes with a couple of spare torpedoes, and a pair of external single-shot tubes, as would be found in the proposed T-class. Although optimal for sub-hunting, there was a desire to reduce costs, and so a reduced option with either twin or single screws, but with underwater speed dropped to 10 knots, was proposed. This put endurance up to 15 days, as the space freed up by swapping out some of the batteries for tanks could be filled up with fuel, and some fun was had trying to work out what kind of power plant was needed, as there was also a requirement, if it was going to be popping up and down hunting subs, to be able to charge the batteries quite swiftly, which in turn needed considerable power, and that was actually somewhat in excess of what was needed for simple surface running. The general concept of this R-class successor appealed to Royal Navy planners, who saw great potential in a squadron potentially being stationed out in the Far East to defend bases ahead of the arrival of the fleet, with the subs also able to move far more easily to infiltrate enemy harbours in closer European waters or potentially in the Far East if they could be staged out by refuelling. Although the cost of the subs, being quite small, was attractive, the slower 10-knot underwater top speed design was felt to be somewhat inadequate for these now rather lofty design goals, and it was instead suggested that if they dropped endurance down to 7 days, they could bring underwater speed back up to maybe almost 13 knots by putting the batteries back in, with a mixture of hydraulically activated and manually activated dive tanks giving the sub a 60-second dive time without using emergency measures. Of course, using emergency measures, it could dive faster. This led to a 450-ton design, which used the extra 50 tons and a twin-screw setup to, in theory, meet all the requirements. But a combination of issues with finding a powerful enough electric motor to give that underwater high top speed, and the fact that someone finally calculated you need to about double the number of batteries compared to the 10-knot design, both meant that a decision was finally taken to step back once again from the high underwater speed requirement in the name of costs and speed of completing the design. The torpedo armament was finally fixed at 4 internal and 2 external tubes, all mounted forward, with some reloads also available for the internal tubes. At one point in the discussion about what diesel to use, some bright spark suggested a huge array of small bus engines. Luckily, that idea was rather quickly dropped in favour of a nice reliable pair of 400 brake horsepower regular submarine diesels. Now, the more specific revisions would begin as detailed design was undertaken. A desire for increased range meant that more torpedoes would be needed because they'd be out longer and thus encounter potentially more targets, and so it was decided there would be at least one full set of reloads for the 4 internal tubes, making a total of 10 torpedoes. Some basic air conditioning was also advanced, since with greater range and thus more time spent on station, it was much more likely that these submarines might be deployed to the Mediterranean or the Far East. In the end, the maximum distance of a patrol from base was calculated at 1,000 nautical miles, at least in good conditions, double what was envisaged when the program began, although it was also acknowledged that a 600 to 800 nautical mile radius was probably going to be more typical given average weather conditions. Although there was some disappointment in trading additional battery space back once again for fuel, the 10-knot underwater top speed was still at the higher end of submarine capabilities, and, unlike many submarines, these could actually sustain that top speed for a decent amount of time. Since the S and T classes had recently been submitted for construction, this logically made these subs the U class, although some officers lobbied to have the class instead named after whichever submarine was named first, somewhat like the various larger but small batch submarine classes of the 1920s, mostly because in Royal Navy parlance, submarines often were referred to in the shorthand as the class name and then the word boat or boats, and a good number of officers wanted to avoid having to call the new subs U-boats. It was determined that if a mounting point was installed, which would allow for later installation of a 3-inch deck gun if needed, the deck gun could be installed, if required, at the cost of 2 torpedoes by way of weight compensation. 3 submarines were ordered in the initial batch, which is sometimes known as the prototype batch and sometimes known as Group 1, which can be confusing because if it's the prototype batch, then the follow-on ones are Group 1, whereas if it's Group 1, the follow-on batch is Group 2. Nonetheless, these 3 subs were Undine, Ursula, and Unity. All 3 would be laid down in 1937 and commissioned in 1938, but a few issues began to appear as they entered service. The large nose on the bow, which accommodated the external tubes, led to poor seakeeping, and unlike the T-class, there was no scope on the small hull to move the tubes further back along the hull without significant negative impacts on underwater performance. Additionally, although surface speed was a little bit better than expected, underwater speed was about a knot slower than expected, which was a little perplexing for the designers. Their small size also meant that firing a full salvo of torpedoes could make the subs distressingly buoyant. All of these lessons were being absorbed when war came along, and a dozen more subs were quickly ordered. These eliminated the external tubes in favour of a finer bow, which gave them better seakeeping, and they were fitted with an additional tank forward to help balance the submarines when they fired their torpedoes. These reductions meant that it was now possible to fit the deck gun while keeping the full set of reloads aboard. Weight overall, though, had crept up to just under 550-ton standard displacement in production subs. The next 12, the ones ordered at the beginning of World War II, stayed at about the same, but subsequent craft added a little bit more as additional equipment was installed. Another 34 would be ordered on top of the first 3 and then the next 12. But if you peruse all the submarines in the class, you'll notice 2 notable naming issues. Partway through production, the Royal Navy decided to stop using names and use pennant numbers instead, partly as they were quickly running out of names starting with the letter U, and they were also concerned about confusion with the U-class war emergency flotilla destroyers, some of whom, unhelpfully, were reusing names of U-class submarines that had already been sunk. This decision to go with pennant numbers only was, however, quickly reversed, in part due to Churchill's intervention, but some submarines were lost in the intervening gap before they could be given names, and thus you'll see some of the class referred to but with the letter P followed by a 2-digit number instead of a name. Even then, they actually did end up running out of decent names starting with U that weren't already taken by other ships, and so many of the final batch of U-class ordered in 1941 instead moved on to names starting with V, which can lead to further confusion with the follow-on V-class, which were derived very closely from the U-class, and the whole issue isn't helped by the fact that a number of the V-class, which with a slightly refined hull shape and more use of welding managed to solve the underwater speed issue, have themselves a number of vessels whose names start with U, as apparently somebody thought of some extra U names rather belatedly and stuck them on the V-class. As you might expect, for a small submarine operating mostly in close proximity to the enemy coast, casualties in this submarine class were fairly high, with just under 24 of the 49 U-class being built being lost, most of them being lost to enemy action. However, their legacy from spending much of their design process as hunter-killers was eventually borne out when HMS Venturer, a V-class immediate successor sub, became the only submarine thus far to score an underwater sub versus sub kill, which it accomplished towards the end of World War II, and which we've covered in a separate video. So that's a brief history of the design legacy of the U-class submarine, and if you'd like me to go into the combat history of the class, please let us know in the comments below.